You don't walk out of the room, you're like, oh, really? Well, this land is going to cost you $1 million because you just told me you're going to keep going forever, right? And I'm a petty and vindictive asshole.
Hello and welcome to the Vassals of Kingsgrave. In today's episode, we will be discussing Deadwood, Nolan the movie, 2019. I think I said maybe 2018 when we recorded season 3.
Today I am joined by Bina.
Hey guys, this is Bina 007.
Dana.
Kandana on everything.
We're saying the Discord now officially. I guess. Mordian.
Hi, I'm called Mordian at various places on the internet, and Michael in real life.
And I am Thomas FT Ward on the internet, I guess. So what did y'all think of Deadwood the movie? Kind of a strange thing to even have, but what did y'all think of it? Tina, do you want to go first?
I mean, I just watched it before this recording for the first time. And after the, not disappointment, but that real dissatisfaction at the end of season 3, it was just so lovely to see all the actors and characters back, a little bit older. And I really liked it. I mean, it was just tying up the loose ends. It was nice to see, you know, in a very basic human way, just see revenge on Hurst and to see Trixie just being so awesome. And, you know, when Joni and Jane get together, it's just so beautiful. I mean, there was just a lot in there that I really loved. There was a really good, Deadwood is very good at very moving deaths. So the very moving death of Charlie Utter was obviously really emotional. So I'd give it a 5 out of 5. I mean, it was horrible that the show was cut down in its prime, but this really did satisfy me as an ending. And yeah, it was surprisingly moving. So 5 cans of peaches.
That's great. What about you, Dana? What did you think?
I rate it really highly. The only quibble I have with it, and it's the second time I've watched it, is that Waltzing Matilda wasn't published until after a couple of years this movie was set. So like several decades. After
wait,
in Australia?
Yes.
Is it possible for it to have been a common fake between before someone actually wrote it?
No. It was written by like Banjo Patterson, I'm very sure. Like it was, yeah, it was definitely a written thing and then set to music, kind of like the lyrics to Dixie. Like the music had been around for a while and then they set the words to Dixie to it and then it became popular. That was kind of like Waltzing Matilda, but in the very, very early 1900s. And even the second time watching it, it still irked me because everything is so good. And then I'm like, oh, come on. But then again, it's a cute tune. So
it's a really lovely scene. I was wondering if we were going to get the big Al death scene, like when the movie opens. And I just thought, oh, gosh, yeah, this is going to be his decline and end. I thought it was really touchingly done. So I don't care if the song wasn't published.
And I think it's only just because I knew it beforehand. Like that was one of those things that I'm like, oh, took me out. But like, besides that, I love it. It's good. I mean, everything being squashed into, you know, almost like a weekend. It felt like episodes again, which was really good. Like just the length of episodes that I always wanted with Deadwood. And that's what the movie was for me. It's good. Timothy yeah. Oliphant looks fantastic with the mustache and with, you know, that's my thing. But yeah, loved it all. And I love Jane at the end, like finally shooting someone and defending someone when like she's always felt so constrained and like she's a coward. And then she has her heroic moment and she is actually a hero. And Joni tells her, he's like, no, that's not Wild Bill. That's you. That's always been you.
That broke my heart. That was so moving. I think in a lot of ways, this is a coming home. It's like, you know, Seth at the end going home. Of course, he'll always be attracted to Alma, but he's chosen his life with his wife. It's a maturing, even Trixie in a way back at the gym. My husband and I were saying, can you imagine season 1, you know, Trixie, this beaten up whore that you almost kind of hold in contempt for pathetically going back to Al. And yet look at her, so fierce and so rich at the end of this, and Al just so moving.
EB still being a fucking slime ball, but like knowing when to actually tell people shit.
He has more self-awareness, though, in the film. Like, at one point he says, I've been mayor for this many years, admittedly much of it titular. And I was like, he's realised he's a bit of a laughing stock at least.
It makes me as happy as season one does. I
want more, but this at least left me, I'm really pleased it existed and I didn't have to wait for it, because this satiated my appetite in a way that the ending of season three left me really frustrated. So I'm very lucky. I only had a week and a half of that frustration. What about you guys, Thomas, Michael, what did you think?
Yeah, Michael, I think you might
have
a different take.
The hard call for me was deciding on one or two cans of peaches. I thought it was awful fan service from beginning to end. I thought that they simply redid the last episode of the show.
What's wrong with fan service? I'm a fan. I was serviced. I feel better myself.
I felt like I got serviced like by a whore or whatever instead of by that metaphor didn't go anywhere. It all felt very fake to me, very like, oh, this is exactly what we all want. It would be like if there was a Sopranos movie, if James Gandolfini had lived a little longer, and they did a Sopranos movie 10 years after, where it was like Tony at the grill, and like everybody comes over to the house, and it's like, oh, Meadow's pregnant, and you know, Anthony Jr.'s getting engaged, and it felt completely unearned. I thought the acting was not great. I thought that they all seemed like they were doing.
Wow.
Like they had all watched the show recently and were trying to do like trying to mimic themselves from 15 years earlier and not necessarily doing a great job. And like I was sort of saying, I thought the plot was almost non-existent. I mean, they just redid the last episode essentially, but ended it in a way that they thought that the fans would enjoy instead of the way that the ending actually happened at the end of season three, which I mean, and I agree, like I had my issues with season three as well. Like I didn't love the way it ended, but this sort of felt like, I don't know, a real slap in the face to the ending that they did have. I liked pretty much nothing about it.
Like when Wu bought LT.
Wow.
Like all of those emotional beats, like none of them hit for me because they all felt fake. Like they all felt like, oh, this is what people want to see instead of like, this is what happened. I don't know. Like none of it, just like from the very beginning, like as soon as Jane.
Okay, so let me give you one example. Like when Seth is taking Hurst, he's arrested him, which is fucking awesome. And when the guy takes his picture, even better. Like we were whooping at that point. And, you know, Jayden incites the mob to beat him up. And there's this moment where he kind of a little bit loses control. And then there's this look across his face like, do I want this to be, do I want to lose control and let him be killed? Or should I intervene? I thought that was a great moment of acting from Timothy Oliphant. That not resonating?
I mean, at that point, like I was certainly checked out at that point. I mean, like I had sort of made my mind up about what I thought the movie was by then. I mean, I guess I probably would have finished it either way. But like I was certainly not interested by that juncture. But like, again, like, no, like it's sort of that felt like I don't know. That felt like exactly like what you would do if your only concern was like, okay, so like, remember when Seth was dragging him by the ear the first time? What did we all want to happen? Right? Like we would have loved if what we wanted was the whole town to rise against Hurst and get rid of him. Right? Like that's, and so they're like, well, why don't we just do that? And then it's like, yeah, but we don't want to completely ruin Seth. So we'll have Seth pull it back out. I don't have an opinion at that particular moment about, you know, Timothy Oliphant's acting. My issue with the acting is more along the lines of when they tried to act like, whenever they did something that was like a, not necessarily a catchphrase, but like a hallmark of the character from the show, I felt like they may as well have turned to the camera and winked. I felt it didn't feel like they were inhabiting the characters to me in the same way, which I mean, I think would probably have been, you know, nearly impossible for them, I would imagine. You know, it was many years later and they're different people, but the characters didn't feel inhabited in the same way.
I kind of agree with you in a little place, like when I, at the very beginning of the movie, and it just all the words coming at you, like the dialogue, I'm like, it's almost like they're trying to make up for like 13 years of not writing this way and they're just stuffing it all in.
Yeah.
Just like everything is so damn wordy. And I don't know if it's because it takes me a little bit of time to get back into watching Deadwood or if it was always that way, but Yeah, there was some elements, but the way that you're describing it is kind of why I can't rewatch like The Force Awakens. I'm like, oh, the fan service got to the point where Han dies, and I did not care. So I can understand where you're coming from, definitely. But the fan service worked on me in this case, and I like it.
What did you think, Thomas?
So I guess I'm somewhere in between. I definitely feel like the fan service is forced, and especially the Hearst stuff feels exactly what Michael was saying to me, that it's just the Hearst stuff in particular is just, they have Alma dunk on Hearst at the auction. They have the town, and it just seems like all the places where Hearst got over on them in season three, they kind of intentionally go back with Hearst kind of having to kind of take the loss. And that feels very unnatural and forced, I guess, to me. Like the Jane and Jody stuff is great. It's not quite Bubs' sister opening the door at the end of The Wire, but it's almost there for me. That kind of payoff of all those seasons. I guess I should say David Milch is I think suffering from dementia now and is kind of at the end of his creative life, if may not his real life. And I think this kind of is an examination of kind of Al's mortality and his kind of place in the town of Deadwood and stuff is a lot of interesting stuff to me, but it all doesn't seem organic, I guess. And I don't know that what number I would give it, I guess like a 3 or 4 or something. I don't know.
Wow.
But it's I don't love it. It just feels very strange to me. I'm glad it exists. You felt
differently. I'm curious, Dana, did you watch with a gap like the boys did? I'm wondering if partly why I find it, I mean, is it because of the way in which we consumed it that we have such different opinions, maybe?
I originally watched Deadwood many, many years ago, but not as it was coming out. It had been finished for a good couple of years, and then I rewatched it, I don't know, 2 years ago when my partner finally listened to my nagging and watched it. So I guess I didn't have as much of a gap, but if everyone's rewatched it in the past year or so, we'd probably have all about the same, I guess. I don't know. I think fan service works on some people and fan service doesn't work on others. And that's the problems with that kind of thing. Like I did love like Al's coming, like him facing his own mortality and even at the end, still only half accepting it. Like he can divvy up what he wants, but he's still not ready to die. So yeah, I definitely understand why some people, like why you guys can be not that happy with it. Because when you said, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that is accurate. But the fan service did work and I come out of it enjoying it. I also feel like I don't know how season 3 was written. And when they found out, I think it was like halfway through the season, they found out they weren't getting a season 4. So the Deadwood movie does to me kind of feel like, oh, we probably should have ended it this way. Almost like you could wipe out the last 3 episodes of the of season 3 and just substitute the movie.
In a challenge to that, because that's what I was expecting after something that Thomas said in the last episode, I was expecting this to be kind of like awkwardly, it's 5 years later, but really it could be next month. But actually it makes sense to have a bit of distance, doesn't it? Because Hearst can have gone away and put on the garb of being a senator, which I thought was a really interesting spin on things. And it was just really interesting to see the town that little bit more developed, that little bit more prosperous, you know, to see Seth with the kids. I quite liked having the distance. And so while I kind of, in my head, I imagine the town had lots of other stories and bits of narrative that I didn't see, but I came back to see this old story get resolved. It didn't bother me. I wonder if it's a bit the same to my reaction to the first of the new Star Wars films. The second, the final two, I hated. The first one was okay. And I knew it was fan service, but I was okay with it. And I think maybe that's how I feel. Like, I don't disagree with a lot of what Thomas and Michael are saying. It's just, it just didn't bother me. In fact, I was tickled by it, I guess.
I'm glad it exists and I enjoy it. It's just, it's weird and not of the quality that I associate with Deadwood. It's just, I'm glad it exists. I'm glad I saw Dan and Johnny and everyone once more. But it just, like I said, doesn't feel organic like the way Deadwood season 1 feels to me, where everything just feels very real.
Is that asking too much of it? I mean, is that asking too much of something that really was made 15 years later or whatever to do a very specific job?
Yeah, I don't need Hurst in the movie, I guess, myself. Like, just...
Oh, I 100% need Hurst in the movie. Yeah, when he that's what I hated about season 3 is him just wandering off. You know, okay, they've killed fake Trixie and then he just buggers off and that was it. That was it.
The right. Big yeah.
season build up.
So I did hate that in season 3, but I just feel like it's a, like, that's what they decided to do with season 3, and in some ways, I don't know, like, kind of with Tony's death, sorry, I always bring everything back to the Sopranos, but, like, in the same way that with Tony's death, I think it took me a little bit of time to make my peace with the fact that Tony was dead, and that's what that ending meant, and that in retrospect, it's all pretty clear. And once I made my peace with it, it would be very hard for me if David, whichever David it is that made that one, if he came back and was like, no, he's not dead. I don't know why you guys thought that. Like, that would really irritate me at this point. And in the same way, like, I sort of feel like I had made my peace with the fact that Hurst left. And in some ways, I think that was, you know, probably a more realistic ending, right? Like, he won, you know, yeah, he's the really rich guy and he came to town and he won the contest because he's a rich and powerful person and that's what rich and powerful people do. And
well, then they're not as rich as Alma, apparently, who can outbid.
Well, I mean, which is unrealistic also and silly, which is another thing that irritated me in the show or in the movie.
Oh, it made me, when she bids, it made me so happy. But why, we were whooping.
Yeah, sure. Like, but okay, so if somebody says that to you in an auction, what do you do next? You don't walk out of the room. You're like, oh, really? Well, this land is going to cost you $1 million because you just told me you're going to keep going forever, right? And I'm a petty and vindictive asshole because I'm George Hurst. Anyway, though,
no, because then if she, no, you can't do that, Morty, because if he then goes, like, you know, 10,000 and she goes 10,500, he goes 11,000.
Right.
She can stop and then he's liable for the money and he doesn't have it, which is also, it's illegal to
but he definitely does have it.
Do you think, like, do you think he has double the money Alma paid for the land?
What are you talking about? The land was like $3,500. He's a millionaire. I mean, he's one of the richest.
Alma's husband paid like $20,000 for the original land.
Yeah.
So you think he's multiples richer than Alma?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. George Hurst was incredibly wealthy.
She has one claim, which is very prosperous.
That small town bank.
Wait, am I missing something? Was George Hurst an actual person?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
George Hurst. Have you seen Citizen Kane?
I didn't realize that was him.
That's his kid. That's his kid. Is right.
I've been to the place in California and everything. I just didn't realize this was. I knew lots of people in Deadwood were based on real people. I didn't realize this George Hurst. Apparently, he was worth $19 million at the time of his death,
which at
the time was 1/712 of the U.S. gross national product.
Yes, so he is more wealthy than Alma Garrett.
Yeah.
Well, then that makes no sense. I wish you hadn't told me that. Now I'm upset.
Well, it didn't make sense that you weren't accepting that he was richer than her.
I was surprised.
I just thought it was some random schmo.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's really funny.
See, and the thing that I don't like about that scene is it seems like Alma's doing it for Bullock, and I wish she was doing it for, like, Ellsworth.
Deadwood, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's more doing it for herself.
I think she's doing it for the town. I think, to me, that auction scene, in fact, to me, the whole of that is kind of like Deadwood coming together once again, like in season 3, to get rid of this pestilent man.
It didn't seem even realistic that they would have an auction, like, the day. I don't know how that works, but, like...
Oh, I think that seems realistic.
I think they have
a rule that's like, if Hurst is interested in your land, write a fucking will.
Yeah, why didn't Charlie Utter... Did he have no descendants, I guess?
I left it to Jodie or Jane, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm now reading George Hurst's biography on Wikipedia. My mind's blown on so many levels. I can't believe you guys don't like the film. I can't believe this guy actually exists. I can't believe he walked out of the auction if he had infinite money.
Yeah, I'm so surprised that you didn't know he's a real person.
Why like didn't that you tell me?
I just figured that you knew. It didn't occur to me.
I assumed you knew.
Yeah.
I just thought David Milch was being cheeky and making a point by calling him Hurst. Like, haha, look, this is another kind of psychopathic capitalist. Like,
no, it's his father. Yeah.
God, I'm so stupid. I do this stuff all the time.
It's, you know, I mean, you know, most of the names are like, most of the characters are like sort of real people, right?
Mm.
Like they all I don't know that the personalities are accurate and stuff like that, but like the mayor of Deadwood was really, you know, and now I've forgotten his name like an idiot.
E.B. Farnham.
I did do all the reading on Deadwood, just not on Hearst. So is there any evidence in history that Hearst really was a psychopathic murderer and cunt?
I'm sure that, like, if you were a minor, he probably wasn't. I don't know enough about him, I guess. I don't think he, like, raped and murdered people personally.
But, yeah, I don't have any idea about... I have no reason to think any of that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he was a... I mean, he was an 1800s, like, rich guy, right? I'm sure he busted strikes and stuff like that, you know?
Hmm. Hilarious. Speaking of that, I'll give you a good anecdote. So when we were watching the movie, there's the bit when obviously Al is castigating Trixie and said, you know, did you really have to reveal you were still alive? And he's trying to like persuade her not to now go and confront him. And he calls her a loopy cunt. And something about the combination of those two words. My husband, who was like chugging a bottle of Evian water, just like basically spat it across the room. Was laughing so hard.
I think that's a callback to season 3. I think he calls her that as well.
Such a great phrase.
It's a good phrase. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's accurate for her too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. This really was the revenge of Trixie, wasn't it? A lot of this. Gosh, my mind.
I thought Trixie's acting was very good. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, actually, thinking about it, I don't recall any scene with Trixie in particular where I felt like she was also like more, I don't know, like her acting was a little more, or her character rather, I guess, was a little bit more like grounded. It didn't have as much like the kind of like overblown like Swearingen woo kind of stuff. Trixie was mad a lot, but like she didn't have like a lot of like. I don't know. I'm not sure the way to describe it, but
yeah, I thought the woo stuff was very nice. I don't know. It was great.
I mean, I don't know. It was nice, but it was just sort of like I had already reached an eye rolling stage. So
I am there for Grandad Woo. I loved it.
Yeah, that was. I just love Mr. Woo and Al is just really the love story at the heart of this story. Never mind Al and Trixie. Although I realized actually the opening dialogue between Al and Doc, I think, you know, I always said that Mr. Woo's the one person Al really respects in the camp, but I think he respects Doc as well. I mean, that really comes across in their early conversation. I was just pleasantly surprised to see Doc still alive after that hacking in season 3. Yeah,
that was interesting. I mean, I think we kind of talked about it last time, but it is one of those things where it's like, exactly how often how often does tuberculosis go into long-term remission? Like, I mean, it did with
TB
Doc Holliday,
is so, weird, you
know? Yeah.
And I keep reading about it, and I can't understand it, because then some people get like TB in the spine, and then there was like this really famous jazz drummer who had TB in his spine as a kid and never grew above about like 4'8" or something, and had an incredibly twisted spine, but was one of the best jazz drummers to ever come out of New Orleans. TB, you make no sense.
I can't remember. I feel like I was saying something else about the auction thing before we got sidetracked on Hearst, and now I can't remember. Oh, I think it was just something dumb about, like, I don't understand, like, the piece, like, that was another thing, like, just the price of the land, and this is just a dumb Mordian thing where I get upset about the prices of things or whatever, but, like, yeah, like, the that piece of land going for, it's like, $3,500 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it was, like, Seth and, you know, and I mean, I understand it's a piece of land out in the whatever, right? But, like, the idea that that's where they stopped with the bidding is, like, so crazy. Like, Seth and Saul, I think, paid, like, what, like, 10, like, I think they were paying rent of, like, $600 a month for their hardware store lot, like, in the first episode. And, like, I think, yeah, like, Alma...
They buy it for, like, $10,000 or something eventually, yeah, or something like that. I don't remember.
But yeah, yeah, like, and like, Alma's, Alma's claim originally, as we talked about, you know, got bought for $20,000. And I think when they were trying to buy her out, it was, like, in the $100,000 or $200,000 range, right? Something like that?
Because she had a gold claim, and Charliata just had a nice piece of land that was in the way of
I guess
telephone lines.
Sure, my point is just that it's like, it does demonstrate, I guess it demonstrates one of two things. Like, you can either see it as demonstrating that, like, ultimately, like, Hearst is a business guy, right? And it's just like, well, I am irritated, but, like, I'm not going to pay over double the market rate for this piece of land because that's
silly. He murdered the guy. I mean, right. I know there are extenuating circumstances.
But he murdered him for it. And then he's like, oh, but I'm not gonna pay twice what it's worth. That's absurd. Like, and so, like, yeah, I don't know what that's supposed to indicate necessarily. I feel like they should have used different numbers in that scene to make that work better. Maybe they were like, this auction's too long. But I guess they could have just had somebody jump the price immediately. Like, they could have just had Hearst jump to 50 grand or something, and then Alma go to 75 or 100, and then him be like, okay, well, now we're in the realm of absurdity, and I'll figure out a different way. I'll figure out, you know, I'll go in a big loop with my telephone wires to get here, or whatever it was that he was trying to do.
What did you think of Seth burning Hearst's lumber?
Well, after he was chill with, you know, murdering a prostitute in the previous episode, I think it's a small step for him.
Oh, so you didn't even have like the, yeah, do it, Bullock, yeah.
I don't know, it seemed pretty, I mean, it seemed like it was, like, it's obviously not going to work in the long term, right? Like, like Seth's going to single-handedly prevent telephone service from coming to Denver. Like, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't know. It's
depends
like somebody...
how much kerosene and matches he has.
Yeah. It's like somebody knocking down like 5G towers or something. It's like, I mean, okay, but I think in the long term, like, this isn't going to work for you. But, hey, you know, I mean, I'm perfectly happy for him to keep doing it as long as Hearst is in the camp. You know, any sort of petty indignity that you can visit on the man is okay with me. But I don't think of it as a great long-term strategy, I guess.
Any favorite lines? Any, like, good parts for you at all? Or are you just, like, tuned out?
I think that's accurate enough. I mean, I think that the enjoyment I'm sure that there were. I also watched it a week ago now, because I watched it almost right after our previous conversation. And so part of it, I think, yeah, I was kind of tuned out through a significant percentage of it. But and then also part of it is just like, I don't, any particular line that struck me positively, I don't recall well enough to say. But I mean, it's not like, it's also, I wasn't miserable watching it or anything. It was perfectly, you know, a perfectly adequate thing to watch of an evening. But
you don't have like the poster over your dartboard, so you can just throw.
No, yeah, it's not like Game of Thrones where I was mad. Right? I guess that's a good distinction to draw. I didn't like it. I thought that it wasn't good, but I wasn't angry about it. Like, it wasn't offensive to me. I just didn't care for it.
Anyone have any thoughts on the Carolyn Woolgarden, young girl that comes to Deadwood on the same train as Sophia and Alma?
Actually, that was the
who she is or what she represents.
Yeah, like just another girl coming in. I felt that was poorly developed, actually, and I didn't think they needed a new character, really.
I think she was just there because there was a clean prostitute to hold the baby, and it had Trixie talk to a younger version of herself and be like, no, like, you know, how hard did the men work to make you think like that way?
But that would have been more satisfying if Trixie, as someone who knows she's about to inherit the bar, offers her a proper job, which isn't being a whore. But otherwise, it just sounded a bit patronizing to me.
But she doesn't know she's inheriting the bar yet. It's right before she finds out.
Okay, well, then it would have been nice to have a scene afterwards where everyone's dancing. Where Trixie turns to her husband and says, this could work as a dance hall, you know. And and she just glances at the girl as if to indicate to us that this is going to be a better future for her.
Yeah, because I found that character weird, because the initial setup for her is like, is she coming in? I thought when I first watched it, she was going to come in and kind of stir something up, but she would just seem to be something for other characters to bounce off, like Johnny and his stuff about Jen and all that. She just wasn't really there for herself. She was just there for the characters we're actually invested in.
No, I agree completely with that. I thought the same thing. And then as it turns out, she's just something mostly for Trixie, Johnny, and Al to kind of meditate on their lives and their, I don't know, through her, I guess, in some way.
Yeah, but it wasn't well handled. It really wasn't.
Any other characters or plots you want to talk about or discuss?
I was surprisingly moved by the general, like when...
Yeah,
when,
I thought he was very good as well.
And like as soon as they find the body, or they're about to find the body, and he's like, I didn't know, because he knows what it means for him. And he's so nervous about being lynched. And he's, you know, I was saying to my husband, like immediately they just throw him in the jail cell. They don't question him. They don't say this is for your own good in case someone else lynches you as a witness. It was kind of interesting because... having watched that final episode of season 3 very recently, and he played a big part in that election scene, and it's Charlie Utter, God bless him, who, yeah, albeit with racial epithets, there's no get in line and cast your vote. And you just sort of think, I guess that was the era of Reconstruction still, or had Reconstruction already ended, but you just thought it almost felt like quite a good time in Deadwood, because as much as it, you know, there was a lot of racism, obviously, he was at least participating in an election. And then you just looked at him with his hair growing out and he just looked so timid and scared. And I thought, this is when things are going back, I guess, when lynching is real. And when he's...
But yeah, by this period of time, like Reconstruction had always already failed. Like they knew by that time. And what struck me is how much he reminded me of like Hofstadter, just from the get-go, just that, you know, at least Hofstadter was, you know, trying to have a business and all that, and ended up, you know, ending his own life because of not being able to live in the world that he wanted to exist. And unfortunately, had to live in a world that did exist, and his guilt around everything to do with Bullock's nephew. But from just as soon as you see him fishing, he just felt like Hofstadter to me, just like so beaten down by the past 15 years, where I had always hoped he had a bigger place in Deadwood, but that's not how the world worked. And yeah, it was sad. But I loved the final scene with him and Bullock. I thought that was very good.
Yeah, and it contrasted for me sharply with, I always feel there's one good death per season in Deadwood, and the one that I didn't affect me was the season 3 one. So, but yeah, very moving. Very moving, but not for Michael. I have nothing else to say about the movie. I mean, I agree with you guys. It was very straightforward. It wasn't complex like discussing a season, right? It brought me some measure of comfort after extreme dissatisfaction, and I'll forever be thankful for that.
Yeah, I wonder if I had watched it without discussing season 3, like if I had just watched it straight in, like ended season 3 and then immediately watched it, if it would have, if I would have felt happier about it, just because it did give me the cathartic, like Hearst ass kicking kind of stuff that season 3 seemed to be building towards and then never gave me. Like if I hadn't had the time after season 3 to, like, you know, kind of work through it and be like, okay, no, I guess this is more realistic, all right, fine, this is how things go, and then immediately to have that kind of been like, no, it's not, we can still beat him up.
Yeah, I wonder if I would have enjoyed it less if I had actually watched season 3 when we talked about it recently.
Yeah.
I did enjoy how much Seth had changed, like having his own family and that being his priority, like from the get-go, him having kids, you know, dancing with Alma, and his daughter comes up and like that's his priority.
Yeah, that was lovely to see. And they didn't wash it under the carpet or sweep under the carpet. They're like, we know that he does have a pull to Alma, but he just has something bigger now. And therefore, when he goes home, and, you know, his wife will always know that he has the love of his life is Alma. But he does in his own way love his wife too. And she's obviously made peace with that. He has a nice house. He's given her a good life and security and a family again. And
And when she's saying grace before they have breakfast, it's she knows him so well.
Yeah.
In the same way that like Al and Bullock know each other so well. So when like Bullock's trying to call Hearst out and he just sees Al's face and he's like, oh no, I'm going over there right now. And Al saying like, where have you been, Bullock? Just, you know, I guess as Deadwood has matured as a camp to a town, they don't interact as much. There's no reason for them to be in each other's lives as much. And they do, in their own weird little way, enjoy what they do together.
I think so. It's like the band's back together. I really love the final scene where Trixie starts doing the prayer and you're like, for real? And then Al's just like, you know, God can fucking stay in his heaven. I want no part of it. I thought that was... And my husband, he's like a militant atheist, was like, yes!
Yeah, that's a callback, right? From season 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
My biggest problem with the movie is that there was no Doc and... Is it Jem?
Yeah.
dancing scene, because that's my favorite part of like season one. Jules, yeah. There we go. Jewel and Doc dancing scene, because it's my favorite part of season one and season two.
At the wedding, you would just assume there would have been one, right? There's no reason. Unless we all missed it. I didn't see it either, but you just assumed it would have been there.
Might be in the background of the wedding. I'm going to have to go through and look frame by frame. How does Timothy Oliphant look older in this than he does when he does his Mando cameo?
Makeup. Good makeup, right? I mean, that's basic man.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. I don't know. I think he looks... A lot of people look... Like Charlie looks so old here, and I don't know.
But, I mean, the bit where Al Saul pissed his pants.
Yeah, Saul even looks a lot older. Even Molly Parker, who's... I don't know. I think she's still good-looking, but she looks not great here. I think she has a very sad life. Alma has a very sad life.
I agree.
I don't think high-neck anything does... any good to Molly Parker, and it does age people. It does have that really matronly look. The first time I watched the movie, she seemed so superfluous, there we go, to everything besides the auction scene, where it's like, well, no, what has she been doing for 15 years?
Nobody wants to.
I kind of care a little, you just bug it up. And like, yeah, you say Deadwood, the bank's kind of expanding, so does that mean it's in other towns?
Maybe.
I would have liked a scene with Alma and Trixie, I guess. I would have, guess that's more fan service, but I would have liked a scene with Alma and the baby and Trixie, I think would have been nice. But
for those of you, this is a bit exclusionary, Dana, so I apologize, but if you've watched the show's comment anyway. So far we've watched together The Sopranos, The Wire, and Deadwood as a sort of triumvirate of HBO brilliance of that era. How would you rank them now?
Well, for me, it's I had not watched The Sopranos before this, but it's Deadwood, The Wire, The Sopranos for me.
I think it's the same for me, and I'd never watched Deadwood before. That's how good I think it is. I always used to say The Wire and The Sopranos were some of my best favorite TV, but actually Sopranos has slipped. So to me, it's Deadwood and Wire are very close, but and then there's a big gap to Sopranos.
I mean, I think I would still invert it. I mean, I don't know. I always have a hard time trying to, I usually just prefer not to make any pretense of objectivity and just say my favorite shows instead of the best shows. So as far as my favorite shows, I would invert it and have it Sopranos, Wire, Deadwood.
Dolph? Okay.
I mean, even season one, I mean, I wasn't certainly the best season, but I've never been, completely a fanatical fan of, if that's redundant, but I've never been a fanatical fan of Deadwood.
And it's weird because I don't think I would call myself a fanatical fan of it. I just think season one is so tremendous that, and season two really, that it deserves to be up there. I wonder if something like Sopranos, because it went on for longer and had its weaker season, somehow suffers by comparison because there's more room for it to get flabby. And I think it hasn't aged as well, maybe. And there's something
I'm looking forward to drama. Rewatching The Sopranos at some point. I mean, not anytime soon, but I'll be interested to see on a rewatch.
Yeah.
What I feel about The Sopranos, because I'll now know the characters' arcs and stuff, and good things I'll appreciate more and stuff.
So to any listeners following along at home, not that we invited you to follow along at home, but
since we didn't record anything.
But we do talk about the shows on the Discord, whether or not we record about them. We're next going to do Mr. Sunshine, which is currently on Netflix if you're in Europe. So if anyone wants to watch along, we can watch along together that show.
Very much looking forward to rewatching that as well.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, not rewatching for me, but I'm interested to see. I don't remember the last. I guess I watched Babylon Berlin a few years ago, but I haven't watched a foreign language series in a long time.
Yeah, I think you might hate it, Michael.
I'm certainly open to that possibility, Thomas.
It can't be worse than Deadwood the movie for him.
I mean, this is. I think it
30
could,
hours but, or whatever. You
know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I mean, and if I hate it, I'm
well, you get to pick. You get to pick the next show. How's that?
Oh, I mean, no worries. But I'll survive. I imagine.
Cool. All right then, my lovelies. I will leave you to it and rejoin the fam.
Thanks, all.
This won't take long to edit. Although, actually, this ironically, this actually may be longer than season 3 podcast in terms of actual discussion of content. So,
I think it is for sure. Yeah,
we barely, other than a brief interlude into the fog of London, I think we stayed on topic the whole time.
Yeah,
maybe it's not having Zoom. I don't know. Maybe Zoom makes us distractible.
Maybe. Anyway, this
or
is
maybe I feel more serious because I'm wearing a headset.
All right, my lovelies. I will speak to you. Well, whenever we speak, there's no rush on Mr. Sunshine. I'll take it.
Yeah, no rush.
And although we're in this interesting period where the crown has run out and nothing else has taken its place, so there is TV.
That's good.
Space. Cool. Have a good weekend, guys.
Right, you guys too. Thank you.
Bye. Good fight.